Hello and welcome to the Average Pastor Podcast. We are average pastors with an above average church, not famous, never gonna be. I'm Michael Gerald, your associate pastor here at Tri-Lakes United Methodist Church in Monument, Colorado. With me is Pastor Bob Kaler, our lead pastor. How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing well today. Thank you very much.
Excellent. We're looking at a lovely day outside, nice and sunny, a little snow on the mountain out there. Good day for hiking. So what are we doing in here?
Well, you know, this is why we make the big money. So we're here to talk to our congregation, talk to anybody else who wants to listen about stuff that's coming up in our sermon series. This is kind of like the cutting room floor, I think. That's kind of the way I'd put it. The stuff that we would talk about if we had more than 20 minutes on Sunday morning to talk about it. And so we've decided to kind of put this podcast together as a way of letting you into the back door and see how things get formed. The sermon is written for Sunday, but there's always something that can be added to it, much to the chagrin of those who may be sitting through it. But that's the way it works.
Absolutely, yeah. And our sermon series that we've been working on for the last week or so, we had an introduction last week into the series, Earn, Save, Give, part of a very famous maxim that John Wesley offered. And Bob, tell us a little bit about your introduction from last week.
Well, last week we looked at the idea of wisdom and that before we start talking about money, we've got to think about the idea of wisdom. We need a framework from which to look at these things. For example, most people, when they think about money, think about an old maxim that goes, money is the root of all evil, which is actually not what Paul said to Timothy. He said the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. So money for Paul and for John Wesley was a neutral thing. It could be used for good or ill. In fact, Wesley called money an excellent gift. He put a positive spin on it. And so we're looking at that from the perspective of how we use that idea, a framework that allows us to use it as an excellent gift. We need wisdom from God and recognize that all that we have comes from God. And once we recognize that, then we can be able to use it in a way that honors God. That's kind of the basis of what we talked about with the introduction. And this week we're diving into Wesley's first principle, which is kind of surprising given all the stuff we normally hear about money in church. We always think give, give, give till it hurts, you know, things like that. So this is a different sort of thing where Wesley actually said in his sermon that this is a way that we actually communicate with those who are in the world. This is where we meet them on their own ground, as he said, because a lot of people are out there trying to earn all that they can. But again, without that wisdom, we can earn lots of money, but not use it in ways that are glorifying to God or that ultimately make an impact in the world. And it's interesting, as I was writing the sermon this week, there are two texts we're going to use. One is the text of the dishonest manager in Luke 16, which is one of those weird parables that pastors usually leave alone because Jesus seems to be throwing everything upside down. The dishonest manager is the hero of the story, so to speak. But it's interesting in there, there's a parallel to another parable that goes back to Luke 12, which is the parable of the guy who builds more barns. You know, he has a big harvest, so he says, I'm just going to keep building more barns. And in each of those cases, when you look at the text, both of these guys have an inner dialogue. And the question is, what will I do? What will I do with this situation? In Luke 12, the guy with the big barn says, I'm just going to build bigger barns. I'm going to hoard it all up. Whereas in Luke 16, the text we're going to look at on Sunday, the idea is, what will I do? I'm going to need to manage this in a way that helps me have relationships with people so that when the rich owner fires me, I will have relationships to rely on. So the whole point of it being that the way that we manage money is primarily in relationship to others and in relationship to God.
That's interesting because you mentioned that, and you know, Wesley's sermon that you're talking about is the use of money. And in that sermon, he says, having first gained all you can, and secondly, saved all you can, then give all you can. Of course, this is where we're deriving the entire series out of. But it's interesting that you brought up a couple of points already, but how does this square with our concept of economics, particularly personal economics, in the 21st century?
Well, we've been taught that we are the center of the universe. That's kind of the Western mentality. And so when we look at money, we look at it from how do I receive as much as I can so that I can retain as much as I can while I spend as much as I can.
That sounds like my daughter.
That's how we're conditioned. I think, you know, if we believe in the original sin and the sinful nature, which Wesley did, then we're programmed that way. When we have money, we want to use it for ourselves. And to think of it in a larger framework is kind of, well, preaching that is kind of a Sisyphean task. You know, it's like pushing a rock uphill in a culture where people are always about acquisition and consumerism. So we need that wisdom that helps us see beyond that and to realize that we actually live in a larger story and that our lives have an eternal impact, not just now, but into eternity. I always love John Ortberg's idea that we kind of manage money like Monopoly money. So I tell the story about playing Monopoly with my cousins when I was a kid. You know, when we had a rainy day or whatever, I'd be at my grandparents and I'd play Monopoly with my cousins. My cousins were all bigger than I was. That's where I learned about things like extortion and, you know, bank robberies and things like that. Because suddenly if you got up to go to the bathroom or whatever, your money was gone. Or I learned a lot of things about economics playing Monopoly with my cousins. But what Ortberg says, and I always found this interesting, is that what's the point of Monopoly?
It's to teach you how to manage money, teach you to learn, you know, basically how to handle property, money, that sort of thing.
But how do you win the game?
You win the game by having the most. It's the 80s maxim, he who dies with the most toys wins.
Yeah, you own everything. If I own everything, then I'm the winner, which is why we never actually made it to the end of a game of Monopoly. It takes too long to own everything. Yeah. But if you own everything, then at the end of the game, what happens to all that stuff? It all goes back in the box and it gets slid under the bed until such time as someone else will come along someday and pull it out and play with what was once your stuff, which is a powerful image when you think about it. And Wesley's idea was, look, this stuff, these resources are God-given. We only manage them for a time. And so at what point does our use of this money honor God and have an eternal impact? Does it have an impact beyond us? That's the question.
Well, and that brings up a really interesting question that I have here. What are our limits, our ethics behind this idea of gaining all you can? Because the way that it's, you know, the way that you take that when you hear it to start with is almost in that sort of 80s fashion, and it's been cyclical throughout history. We've had periods where people just, you know, everything was super materialistic. But how do we define the limits or the ethics behind gaining all you can, particularly in a world that has tendencies toward materialism? And do you see a shift in materialistic culture? I know that recently I read several articles about the generations coming up. They don't seem to care quite so much about the stuff that they wear. They shop at Goodwill. They shop at secondhand stores and things like that. As far as this maxim of gaining all you can, what message would you speak ethically into the world regarding that?
Well, it's interesting that you ask that, because that's kind of the point that Wesley brings out in his sermon. He gives several caveats in terms of how we earn all that we can. For example, we earn all that we can, but not at the expense of our own life and health. That we don't put ourselves in a place where we are becoming unhealthy in terms of gaining money. We're not working so much that we're not resting. You know, we're not ignoring our families. We're not treating our bodies badly. Interestingly, in this sermon, and the studies have proven this out, he said that sitting too much will cause all kinds of problems. John Wesley said this back in the 18th century, and we've seen that become the reality in our own time. In fact, if you go to Wesley's apartment in London, he has a chair there. He was a little strange, you know, in terms of his practice, but when you think about it, it was interesting. This chair has springs in it so as to replicate riding a horse because he thought that was great exercise. So when he would sit, he would kind of bounce in the chair as a way of maintaining motion all the time. So we don't earn money at the expense of our health. We have to get up and be able to earn money, but also maintain that which God has given us, which is our body as the temple of the Holy Spirit. He also says in there, we should not gain wealth at the expense of our mind. So we can't do things that are beyond our conscience. And that goes to things like ethical business practices. He even talks about paying your taxes, which is always something that we're always trying to figure out how to get around. But Wesley says, pay what's owed and don't do things that will go against conscience or against the will of God. So that's a big caveat in the midst of that. And then the last one he says is that we can gain all we can, but not at the expense of our neighbor and not at the expense of someone else's profit. The basic overall kind of conception for Wesley is, does our economic activity profit the souls of others? You know, when we buy clothes, when we buy cheap clothing, are we profiting the souls of those who made it? Or are we enabling this kind of economic slavery that takes place in third world countries? When we engage in price fixing or something like that to try to undercut our competition, are we using our economic activity in ways that profit the souls of others? That's a powerful way of thinking. That's kind of the overall principle. So Wesley was not about unbridled acquisition, but through these filters, because he said, if you gain it in this way, this ethical way, then God can really use it in a way that's powerful and can multiply and have an impact in the world.
Now, going back to something you said originally, and something you began this conversation, or we began this conversation with, you quoting Paul's comment to Timothy about the love of money being the root of all evil. Now, when we talk about gaining all you can, and we talk about this idea of the love of money being the root of all evil, are these two things mutually exclusive of one another? And what I mean by that is, in this process of gaining all you can, how do you really protect yourself from getting to that place where the love of money becomes an issue and we run into all of these economic materialistic problems that we were just talking about?
Well, that was Jesus's concern in the parable, because on the one hand, he says, make friends through the use of worldly wealth so that when it's gone, they will welcome you into eternal homes. And he goes on to say, you can't love God and love money at the same time. So the question is, what's the overriding principle around our acquisition? Is it our love of money or love of self, or is it our love of God? If we're acquiring money based on our love for God, then we look at it in a completely different way than we would if our primary goal is to love money. So Wesley would look at this and say, we see this as a gift. We manage it for God's glory, for God's reputation, which is really part of the parable. It's the backhanded sort of under subtext of the parable, in that when the dishonest manager goes out and he tells these other people to reduce their bill. One, he's made a name for himself. They love him. I mean, in the sermon, I talk about the fact that, you know, if your banker came to you and said, you know, that $200,000 mortgage you have, why don't you take your bill and make that $50,000? How would you feel about that banker? You'd feel pretty awesome.
That's a nice guy. I want one of those bankers, yeah.
But you'd also be loyal to the bank, wouldn't you? You'd be like, this is my bank forever if they're going to do this kind of thing. And so what the dishonest manager does is, when he reduces those bills, he not only enhances his own reputation, he in a backhanded sort of way enhances the reputation of his master. And the master actually commends him at the end of the parable, because the master knows, now I can't do anything to these people because now my reputation with them is golden. And so the question for us is, are we managing money in ways that enhance God's reputation and in ways that also enable us to be in authentic kind of relationship with other people? That's the overarching principle, which is very different than that unbridled acquisition of I've got to have more and more and more for myself. I now see myself as a manager of God's resources rather than a manager of my own.
So in Wesley's opinion, this ends up being more an act of stewardship.
Yes.
And not, you know, as you say, in talking about the dishonest manager, this becomes sort of placing us in the position of the dishonest manager with the understanding that it is God for whom we are managing these things.
Exactly.
And so we're looking at as Christians, as believers, and having to keep an eye on those things and know that whatever we're doing it with a godly intent, or we really shouldn't be doing it.
Right. And I think the overall idea is that it's not ours in the first place. We didn't come into the world with anything, and we ain't leaving with anything, despite the fact that we'd love to. You know,
it's kind of like your Monopoly analogy.
Exactly.
A minute ago. It gets put back under the bed at the end of the day.
Yeah, you're going to leave it behind. I mean, we just had this whole deal this past January. We went through our estate plan, and that was a powerful exercise because you realize how much you could acquire. I mean, well, for me, most of it is life insurance. So as the lawyer said to me, you're worth more dead than alive, which is probably true. But when we thought about, okay, what are we leaving behind? We're going to leave this behind. That was a startling realization because you don't think about that too much, that I'm going to be gone. And what's going to happen to all this stuff? At what level does it matter at that point? And I think about my kids, but I also think about how can I use this money that's left over. I mean, 10 bucks is 10 bucks, but how can I use this money that's left over to enhance God's kingdom, that it has an eternal impact? When we proceed from the idea that we love God first, then that puts that in perspective. So in a way, this series actually connects back to the previous series where we talked about the marks of a Methodist, the first of one being a Methodist loves God. And when we have that as our primary orientation, as Jesus said, where your treasure is, your heart follows. But I think the opposite is also true. Where your heart is, where your love is, your treasure will follow as well.
All right, that sounds great. Well, this has been a great inaugural version of our podcast, our show here. And signing off here for Bob Kaler, I am Michael Jarrell. We are average pastors with an above average church, not famous, never going to be, but we are the Average Pastor Podcast. Tune into us right here on iTunes. Thanks.